obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.
Morning, everybody. My name is Johnny, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm glad to be here this morning. I'm glad to be sober. I want to thank Shirelli, wherever she is. It's an AA meeting. She's probably having breakfast. Wherever she's at. I'd like to thank the fugitives from the pool. And more importantly, I'd like to thank my sponsor for being here and my lovely wife, and tell you that I'm very pleased to be here and very privileged to be in a gathering of Alcoholics Anonymous. I have always considered it some type of privilege to be allowed to sit in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. I have never been able to get it through my sick head that I have a right to everything that goes on here just because I'm lucky enough to stumble into a room, get sober, and stay that way. And the reason I tell you that this morning, because everything that's good and decent in my life is the byproduct of the God I discovered sitting in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's a long, long way from where I came to in Alcoholics Anonymous. My journey in Alcoholics Anonymous, to discover Alcoholics Anonymous, began with my first thought of life and feeling of life. I had this restlessness, this irritability, and this discontentment inside of me. I knew there was something wrong with me. I didn't quite know what it was. I just couldn't put my finger on it. I just had this feeling about me. So I started my journey to find whatever it was that was bothering me. And I looked around and I could not see any similarity of any type of sanity, because I came from a large Irish family without any type of religious background, so they were just crazier than hell. They were bad enough on the natch. You take Irish people without a religion and add whiskey, you got a lot of trouble. I mean, they're crazy. They beat each other up and stole each other's women. They went to penitentiaries. They did all kinds of stuff. They were bootleggers, whores. I mean, they just was a real functional family. And I looked at all that stuff, and I remember laying on a therapist's couch in my journey. That's where some of us end up. And I remember him saying to me, didn't that background in your family, didn't that scar you? And in those days, you see, I was in my victimization sense. I'm looking for any excuse for my actions. And that's a great excuse. Oh, yes. Yes, I was just terrified at night when Daddy and Mommy got in fights. I was just terrified when Daddy threw me across the room. If they was to ask me that question today, after being an Alcoholics Anonymous for all these many years, I would say with all sincerity and all truthfulness, no, it did not. It didn't lay a glove on me. The reason being, I was so self-centered and self-absorbed then that I did not have room inside of my soul or anywhere else for anybody else's thought. I'm too concerned about me. What is this? What's wrong with me? How am I going to get rid of it? What's going on? I don't know. My grandmother, she was 90 years old. My grandmother. She never took a drink of alcohol or smoked a cigarette in her life. Now, my grandmother wouldn't think it's a big deal that I've been out of the penitentiary 53 years. Big deal, she'd say, I ain't never been in the penitentiary. She should have had a couple drinks. You might have went there, Granny. I watched my grandmother when I was a child. I watched my grandmother get up on Sunday morning after Sunday morning after Sunday morning as I spent time with her because everybody else was busy. I saw her get up and put the best thing she had on. I saw her walk over the bodies. I saw her disappear for a couple hours. I saw her come back. Something had happened to her. I didn't know what it was. But she was different. She was a little lighter in her being. She danced around them. She cleaned them up. She sang songs to Jesus. And I took a look at that. Unbeknownst to me, she had the very thing that I was searching for. And I had this wild idea, like a lot of people today think, that all I'm going to have to do is go there and do what she does, and I'm going to have what she's got. The problem with that is my grandmother's not alcoholic. I didn't know that. And when I sit in church with my grandmother as a child, waiting for this thing to happen to me, and listen to the minister say to me, come down here. My grandmother says, go down there, little John, go down there. I went down there. I don't remember anything happening. Don't remember anything at all happening. But there was nothing wrong with my grandmother at all. My grandmother's church. There's nothing wrong with my grandmother's church. There's something wrong with the jackass sitting in it, me. What I'm doing then, I don't know that I'm doing it. It's something I have done all my life, up to and probably including this morning. I'm looking for something way out there to make me feel better in here. It always goes to prove to me that the problem has always been there. And my first solution to this spiritual restlessness in my soul, what our book talks about, is I sat on the back porch of my grandfather's house and took a drink of his bootleg whiskey out of his fruit jar. And I guess, according to the only authority in Alcoholics Anonymous, which is our book, the next couple of minutes of my life is what makes me an alcoholic. I'm not an alcoholic because I spent the next 20 years of my life creating mayhem out in the world. I'm an alcoholic because I have this uncanny reaction to alcohol that 9 out of 10 people who drink it don't seem to get. It's not a bad feeling. It was a great feeling. All I remember doing is I can look back as much as I remember about those things. It took me from the black pit of nothingness and it stood me into the gray fringes of the business of living. It installed in me some type of arrogance that said, damn you, world, it's all right. I'm not good enough to be around the good people, but I'm too good to be around the bad people. It's okay, right here. And I pursued that illusion and a delusion into the gates of insanity and death. See, I wasn't ready for what happened next because I didn't realize what was happening next until after I got to you. You see, once I put alcohol into my system, I'm one of the 1 out of 10 people that once I take a drink, I'm powerless not to take the next one. I got to take it. I didn't know that. And so I drank, and next thing I know, I'm pulled out from underneath the bridge, and I'm stood in front of a judge and sentenced to the Hutchinson State Reform School. I don't know that that's alcoholism. I don't know that alcohol is an uncanny ability, but it was a pattern for life that I followed for the next 20 years of my life. Always chasing that illusion, always chasing that illusion down the road somewhere, that this is it, this is it. And I know what I did when I came. My mother brought me from this little town in Kansas to California. And on the way out here, she said, things are going to be different when we get to California, kid. She took me out. I got a floater out of the state of Kansas when I was 9 years old. That's what, he's one of them. Get him out of here. So my dream was, yeah, we get to California, things are going to be different. We're going to have a little white picket fence, and my mother's going to make cookies and milk like I've heard other people talk about. My mother's going to turn into my grandmother, and things are going to be fine. We came to California. My mother got me a couple of new uncles and introduced them to me. And I went on the street corner and started drinking. The next thing I know, I'm in juvenile hall in Los Angeles. And I'm being initiated into a gang which took me into a side of hell that I never hoped and prayed to God I never have to resort to again. And I came to in a cell in solitary confinement at a maximum security penitentiary in the middle 1950s, crawling around on my hands and knees like an animal in a cell in a pair of long-handled underwear. And I'm doing the same thing in that cell I've come to understand that I was doing at my grandmother's knee when I was a child in church. I'm looking for an answer, only now it's even more desperate. because now I've got a long 20-year history of atrocities that I had committed, that I'm living with the guilt and the remorse and the thing. When I'm sober, I can't stand being sober. I don't want to be sober. And if I have nothing else to do, I go out and pick a fight and let somebody beat me up, or I get hit in the head, or I bump my head. Anything. I cannot stand life on life's terms anymore. I don't know that. And it's not because of alcohol or drugs or whatever it was that was in my system at that moment. It was because of the actions that I took. I took these actions. I joined this gang. I did these things on my own volition. Alcohol didn't make me do that. Drugs didn't keep me doing it. I did it. What they did, they kept me alive long enough to get to you. That's all. To the answer that I found in Alcoholics Anonymous. To what was wrong with me. And the thing that you got to know, it's hard to seek an answer if you don't know what your problem is. And there's so much false prophecy going on in Alcoholics Anonymous today. That you sit in meetings after meetings after meetings after meetings and hear people try to convince me and them that they're alcoholic and they haven't anything more than a minor or maybe a heavy drinking problem. And it just goes on and on and on. And I'm sitting on a yard in a penitentiary, November the 4th, 1959. I'm surrounded by my little gang. And we're sitting waiting for the mule to come in from the visiting room so we can get loaded. That's what we did. We just got on point and waited. And I saw some women walk across the yard. And I got up and followed them. I followed them in an old, quaint hut of a building that's about as big as this second here. And the funny thing about it, none of my gang said to me, where are you going, widow? Those are the winos. They come here to preach to us. They didn't say that. You see, even my gang were more invested in what they were invested in than what I was doing. But they were my righteous partners. They didn't care. And I went in and I sat down in a room with people like you. And my life has never been the same since. There was no automatic thing. My first meeting very nearly became my last meeting. You got up at podiums like this, you talked about drinking. You talked about being sober. I was sober. So I think you have nothing to offer me. I don't want to be sober, and I am sober. So I almost leave Alcoholics Anonymous. I almost walk away from things. Sometimes it's scary. When I sit in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, believe that here I am sitting in a room, I'd sold my soul for a program like this, and I didn't recognize it because I don't know what's wrong with me. I got this restlessness inside of me, this irritability inside of me. I can't stand being sober. I'm flushed with the nightmares. My mother hates me. I'm responsible for the death of my 17-year-old brother in 1951. I've lived with that nightmare. I can't do it anymore. I'm not going to stand here and give you the popular theory, quit working. It always worked. It'd work tonight if I took it. If alcohol quit working in your life, you don't need to come to AA anymore. If that's your problem, you don't need AA. If alcohol is your problem, Alcoholics Anonymous really has no answer for you. I guess some of the so-called sober living houses do. Big hospital in Seattle, Washington has a long list of people they call recovered alcoholics who are no more than just social or heavy drinkers. And that's all they need. I didn't know that. But there I am. And you know why I'm there in that room, in that penitentiary that day? Because of my grandmother's prayers. My grandmother prayed for me every day of her life. My grandmother had the ability to see something in me that nobody could see. Her little Johnny, she used to call me. The last time I saw my grandmother, I'm strapped down on a bed in Manager's Clinic in Topeka, Kansas. And my grandmother's kneeling at the foot of my bed weeping and praying at the same time. My grandmother never got to see me sober. But I'm sure she knows about it. And I thank her every day. But you see, my last time out in the boonies out there, I killed me, for all intents and purposes, because I ended up strapped down on the bed in the Los Angeles County Jail, more dead than alive. And laying in that bed that morning when I came to, as I was picked up off a concrete floor and put in there by a great big black man by the name of John, there was a doctor standing there, and his word for me, son, you're going to die, there's nothing I can do for you. I'm 2 years with all the money I need, with all the dope I need, everything I need for 2 years. Self will run riot. And I'm 128 pounds of bright yellow strapped down on a bed with a doctor telling me I'm going to die. To the best of his synthetic knowledge, that's all he knew. It seemed all right with me. I didn't want to live anyhow. I'm at the end of my rope. I can't stand being sober. I can't stay loaded forever. I'm always getting arrested. If people like me don't try to get sober. I never tried to get sober. I never tried to quit using drugs. I just got arrested. I don't have to try. They just get me. I'm out there. It's real hard. There he is. It's kind of funny when a 128-pound yellow-white boy is standing in a Mexican neighborhood acting like a Mexican. Go get him. I didn't even know I was white till I was sober 5 years, for God's sake. Somewhere in that deathbed of mine, after a period of time with the doctor, I screamed out the only prayer that was said in my life. I said, oh, God, help me. Now, I hear people talk about the prayer of desperation. I don't know whether it was desperation, what it was, but I do know what my book tells me. My book tells me that deep down inside of every man, woman, and child is the basic fundamental idea of God. There you find him. He doesn't say to go look over there or somewhere else. He says, deep down inside of every man, woman, and child is the basic fundamental idea of God. I can see the journey that took me from that deathbed to this platform this morning. And there ain't any physical, unaided will that could guide me. It has to be some type of power greater than myself. Because it's not what I dreamed about. It's not what I wanted on that deathbed. I never dreamed sitting on that yard in November 1959 with my gang when you walked into this room unaided for no reason whatsoever other than that's what you were supposed to be doing. You were alcoholics. You were supposed to be carrying the message. You hadn't got to the point where you didn't need to do it anymore. You've already got yours. I'm going to cut it back now to a couple meetings a week. I'm going to return to normal living. Somebody said that to me one time. I said, you better hope you never see me in my normal living. I said, why? And I said, I may come to see you. You are a deep pucky if I show up on your porch in my cups. There I am. My grandmother's prayers, my prayers at that meeting. And this doesn't look like the answer to what's wrong with me. I had a guy said to me the other night, one of my guys I sponsored was saying, but you don't understand, Johnny, you were tired when you got here. No, I wasn't tired. Not a bit. I've never been tired. I believed everything they had been telling me since I was 9 years old. It had come to pass. You're going to die in an institution. You're going to die from an overdose. The police are going to kill you. You're going to die in a gang fight. I believed it. Hitler wrote in his book, Mein Kampf, if you give me their mind from the time they're nine, they'll be Nazis for life. And when I wandered into that meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, there was no light at the end of my tunnel. This didn't look like home to me. I ain't going to make it. I know it's just a matter of time till one of those prophecies come to life. And I was resigned to it. That was fine with me. That's what I was resigned to. And I didn't know. that you were going to do something and change my life, because you told me things that didn't make sense to me. You said things like, I used to drink. Now I don't drink anymore, and everything is wonderful. Now back where I'm sitting in Inventory Point, I'm sitting back where people like me sit, you know, because I'm too hip to move up front. They might see my tattoo. I said, I can't be alcoholic. How could I be alcoholic? You see, I'm not drinking. I'm as sober as the people saying this. And I'm crazy. I'm going to go tear the throats out or something. I don't know. I'm about two steps away from a straitjacket. I know that. That's my natural being when I'm sober. That's my answer to most of my problems are straitjackets. This was before Thorazine. It's wonderful. My wife still says to me as I sit in the house, things don't escape easily from you, do they, honey? Yep. I don't ever, ever, ever want to forget that. See, my problem then was trouble with a lot of problem people today in Alcoholics Anonymous, as I see it. I'm trying to equate a problem with drinking with this deadly spiritual malady called alcoholism. And they're entirely different. The difference being that alcohol, being a spirit, is the answer to the spiritual malady. Arbel Wilson never referred to alcoholism as the disease. Never. Nowhere in our book does it say that we have a disease. Our book says we have an illness, a spiritual illness. They've come to believe it a spiritual illness. Why in God's world would we need a spiritual awakening if we just had a disease? Why would we need one? Why would we have to find a God of our own understanding? Why would we have to have a power greater than ourselves? Why would we have to have a fellowship to serve with every ounce of our beings if all we have was a disease? Couldn't we just go to the doctor, get a couple pills, and sit down somewhere? You know where that came from? The American Medical Association misdiagnosed our illness. And they did it for monetary reasons. Which one of our greatest benefactors, Mr. Rockefeller, said to our people, money's going to ruin this thing. How true it is. How true and true and true it is. Now, I don't know all that. I didn't know one day when I was led up to a podium in this penitentiary by this little old lady by the name of Myrtle Snyder. And she introduced me to a man who adopted me, basically, the only father ever known, and put his arms around me and he kissed me on the cheek. I damn near hit him. You don't do that in the penitentiary to me, güero loco. I didn't know that day that he was going to be the man that I would pattern my life after. I didn't have an idea about that. I had no idea that day that he was going to be the first person in my life that I ever loved unconditionally, warts and all. I had no idea. I had no capacity to love when I was doing that. I had no capacity. People like me can't love. Love's a weakness. Love shows somebody you have to care for them. I didn't have that. I cared for nobody. I destroyed everything in my life when I got to you. And I don't know, I got a spiritual illness. I don't know, I got this thing, I got this restlessness in my soul. I know the only thing that made it bearable for me to live with me all these many years is the things that I ingested into my system. And there I was, a lost sheep. Alcoholics Anonymous don't work because I'm not alcoholic, so why should I come to you? I've come to you because I liked you. You seemed to have something. I didn't know what it was. I didn't know. And one day I had this thing bad enough that I'd get up and go to these meetings on Sunday morning, and a little man wandered in. His name was Les Hamlin. He was an ugly little fella. I mean, he looked like a little Irish squirrel or whatever they call him, you know, little guy. And you know, once upon a time I heard somebody say to me that angels are just the messengers of God. Angels are just the messengers of God. I knew this man. He was my baseball coach when I was a star second baseman for the San Quentin Pirates for a couple of years. And I watched him walk out of a penitentiary. I'm sitting on the yard with some of my gang, and I watched him walk out. You know what I said to him? You can't make it out there, old man. They won't let us. We can't make it. I believe that with every fiber. Can you imagine what I thought when he walked into this meeting? I didn't know what he was. I didn't know about Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know what's wrong with me. I don't understand this illness. I don't understand this problem. I don't understand anything. But what he did for me that day, no therapist, no psychiatrist, no drug, no alcohol, nothing has ever changed my life as much as he did. You know what he said? You don't have to live this way no more if you don't want to. You don't have to do it like this no more. You know what I'd been told since I was that high? If you didn't drink these things and swallow these things and smoke these things and shoot these things, you wouldn't have any problem. What none of these great learned people with their synthetic knowledge about what's wrong with me seemed to understand, that I was as physically sober that day as I am right now. And I just shook my head and knew. They didn't know either. Nobody knew. I was doomed. I was damned. And I was going to burn in this hell that I had created my life. So you don't have to do it this way no more. After the meeting, I did one of the hardest things I'd ever done in my life. I walked up to this little man and I said to him, Les, how do you learn how to live? I ain't interested in being sober from that day to this day and this good life that you've afforded me. Not at all. I'm interested in how I'm going to sleep all night that night without any type of high-powered sedatives in my system. See, the nightmares that are plaguing me are the grave sites that I stood by and watched my mother bury my baby brother while I'm handcuffed between detectives. I've watched my mother's soul be disintegrated in front of my very eyes by my actions. Not by her actions, not by her drinking. I watched that and knew I had a hand on it. See, I've had a hand in everything that happened to me since I come to alcoholics. It's not alcohol's fault. It's not my illness's fault. Disease is a great excuse to be a jackass. I sat in a meeting one night and I heard this woman get up and talk about the family disease. I turned around in solitary confinement one day. There wasn't a damn one of my family in there with me. That's insinuating I can get you sick. That's nothing further from the truth than that. I can't even get me sick. I can't even get me well. I'm saddled with this illness. I don't know what it is. You know what he said to me, that little man? He didn't say, oh, don't drink. Go to 90 meetings in 90 days. Don't drink if your ass falls off. That's what drinkers tell drinkers. He said, there's a book called Alcoholics Anonymous in the library. If you go get that book, I'll go home and pray that you find some part of you in it. And he left. Next day, I'm at the prison library stealing the book Alcoholics Anonymous. I got a big-time gangster image. I'm wrapped around dying in this image. I got this dope fiend, convict, gangbanger image. I'm dying from it. And I don't realize that. So I opened your book to read, not to read it, to get well and to live in this good life of mine, to discover this magnificent way of life. Not at all. I'm reading this book to prove to you my case is different, that I'm not alcoholic. It won't work for me. And somewhere in the doctor's opinion, the words of phenomenon of craving came out to pass in me and triggered my memory of something into my denseness. And I started to reflect on the life that I had lived before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. Life and the opportunities that God had bestowed on me at the grave. The things that I wanted to do more than anything in my life, all my life, is to play baseball. And I was very good at it. good enough to be offered scholarships in a reform school, good enough to offer a contract in Major League Baseball in the penitentiary in 1951. I was very good, and I loved it.
To obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the Month Club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.
But I didn't know what was wrong with me, and I had to ease this sense of comfort and disease. I had to have it. I didn't know I had this. I didn't know that I needed this. I just knew that I had to do it. And I found out that once I take a drink of alcohol, the only way I'll ever stop drinking is somebody put some handcuffs on me or a straitjacket. I have never quit any other way. I'm sorry. I never have thought about quitting. I've never wanted to quit. My mother sat with me in institutions upon institutions upon institutions and said to me, Johnny, if you love me, you would quit doing this. You wouldn't do this. And I wanted to tell her with every fiber in my being, I won't do it anymore, Mom, but I couldn't say it because I knew I had to. I knew that this thing was got me, and I knew I was damned. So I opened this book and I read this thing, and I found out that the reason none of these great things happened to me that I was given the talent to have and the opportunity to have was because I took a drink. I just took a drink. And then the drink took a drink, and then the drink took me. Story of my life. Handcuffs, straitjacket, sane asylum. And there I sit with this newfound knowledge that I didn't understand. And I read on into your book, and a few weeks or a month after that, I'm walking out of a man's office where I'd spent 3.5 hours with him, telling him about every rotten, filthy, criminal thing I'd ever done in my life. Told that man things that day that would have kept me in the penitentiary for the rest of my natural life. And I did it for one reason and one reason only, because I believe it today, well, I believe the 10. I believe that what it says is true in that book, that I have to be searching and fearless and thorough because I am trying to build an ark to walk a free man. That's all. I'm not trying to build an ark to be so sober I'm a dry hazard, fire hazard, for Christ's sake. How many cakes I've got, how many candles I got on my cakes, how many people I sponsor, how many meetings I go to, how many conventions I speak at. I'm trying to live a free man. That's all. My sponsor, Norm, used to talk about walking on the sunny side of the street. Man, most of my life since I've got what you've been on the sunny side of the street. I can't say there's no darkness or clouds on it. I spent the next year of my life in that penitentiary trying to clean up the wreckage of my past, trying to make sure there were no secret indictments waiting for me when I got to the door of the penitentiary, if I ever got there. All these writing letters, making sure. Because somewhere along the line in that book, I found out there's a reason, there's a light at the end, there's some hope even for people, no matter how far down you've gone. Your dark past can benefit others. That's what it says in our book. It promises that in the description of a spiritual awakening in the back of our book, which they mistakenly call the promises. That is a description of a spiritual awakening. I'm going to know a new freedom, a new peace, a new happiness. I will comprehend the word peace, and I will know freedom. No matter how far down the scale I've gone, I can see where my experience can benefit others. What great things I experienced from sitting in a penitentiary. Penitentiary ain't got nothing to do with walls hanging around it. There's people sitting in this room in deeper penitentiaries than I've ever been in. You're talking about the bondage of self in our program. The book says, relieve me from the bondage of self. The book also says selfish and self-centeredness is the root of my problems. It repeats us over and over and over in the solution, the chapter of the solution. It says an illness, and we've come to believe it an illness. I know it is. I know what I have. And I'm an alcoholic. I know that. I know that with every fiber in my being. I didn't know that coming in here. I didn't know what an alcoholic was. Neither does anybody else. The false promises by the falsehood that's going on in AA today is, you're an alcoholic if you drank. That's not true. That's a false prophecy. Just because you drink does not make you alcoholic. It has to have some type of a certain abnormal reaction to you. It doesn't, normal people, 9 out of 10 people who drink alcohol don't end up in the penitentiary a week later. They don't stand handcuffed between two detectives while they bury the only thing you've ever cared about in your life, your baby brother, and you're responsible for it. Alcohol didn't make me do that. I did it. One of the great things that Alcoholics Anonymous has done for me, it's allowed me the opportunity to be responsible for my own actions, drunk and sober. Drunk and sober, I am responsible for my actions. I do not have the excuses that my alcohol allows me bad behavior. I do not have the excuses not to have to go to a meeting anymore because I'm not drinking anymore. I don't have to have the excuses. I don't have to do what I used to have to do when I was new because I've been sober for a period of time. I don't have to do things like, it is necessary for me to carry the message. I've got mine. I don't do that. One of the sad things I see in AA, I see it in my own home group. I see it on Monday, I see it on Wednesday. I hear people time and time and time again get up at these podiums of Alcoholics Anonymous and say things like this. I used to go to the yard every week. I used to go to the meeting every week. I used to call my sponsor every day. I used to do this, I used to do that. Sad part about it, they ain't doing it no more. That doesn't bother me so much. The people they sponsor don't have to do it anymore either. That bothers me. And then the statement, I love the people I sponsor. I don't buy that. I don't buy it at all. How can you possibly say that you have been given this great gift through these actions that you've taken, and yet you don't have to do it anymore, so you don't have to pass the gift along? I don't understand that type of language here. I don't understand that type of reasoning here. I don't understand it at all. You know what I do with the guys I sponsor? I sit with them every month on the third Tuesday of the month, and we read our book. You know why? When I was new, I read our book. And I incorporated this program of living, this thing into my life. I took these steps. I didn't work them. I took them. I opposed the word work. But I've incorporated them into my life and my well-being to the best of my ability. That doesn't mean I become perfect. I've been so spiritual, I'm unholy, and I just walk such high grace that I don't ever do anything wrong. Come on. I'm a human being. That's why I urge the people I sponsor with everything inside of me, don't make me your God. I'm a human being. I have failures. I have feet of clay. I watched the man that I love more than anything else become a human. I watched my Papa Chuck. I watched that man with everything inside of me. I loved him so much. I watched him. He adopted me. And I watched him in the last year he lived basically take back everything he told me as a son. And there's a reason for that, because he was suffering from this crippling disease called destroying him from within. But you know, I had a ringside seat watching that with my papa. I got to sit with him. I got a little chance to pay him back what he did for me. I was telling Karen this morning, my lovely wife, we got here Wednesday, we checked into our room, and our room has a balcony on it. Karen was doing something with the luggage, I don't know what it was, and I walked out and looked at the balcony, and you know what was staring me right in the face? A hummingbird. I sit on my papa's porch with him many times when he was sick and when he wasn't sick, and watched the hummingbirds feed at his feeder. And you know what he said to me? He'd laugh at me and he'd say, "Son, look at that little rascal. The aeronautical engineers don't think he can fly. But he don't know that. He's a hummingbird." That's what I was taught here. I didn't know that I could live sober, because I didn't know what was wrong with me. And the sadness is that thousands of people coming to Alcoholics Anonymous have no clue what's wrong with them. None whatsoever. They don't have the opportunity to have a man introduce you to a fellowship of recovery and give you a place where a chung-chewing, babbling idiot loser like me can serve to the best of his ability to God and the people about him. See, that's what our program talks about. Our program talks about abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Clear away the records you pass and give freely. It talks about all kinds of things that you do not hear much of anymore. It's almost like our book is obsolete. The General Service Office is doing the best they can to change it. So far, they've done a good job changing all the stories. I never had them ever ask me or answer, "Why are you changing the stories? Aren't we supposed to be identifying with an illness, not a person?" I've never heard my story in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've heard the feelings and the illness and the recovery from it, but I have never heard my own personal story here. So how would I have ever supposed to identify with this if I never identified with this illness? If I never had the opportunity to sit and counsel with my sponsor? If I never had the opportunity to learn what I'm supposed to be doing here to serve this fellowship? That's my purpose in life. My purpose in life is not to be so sober that I can't stand me anymore. My purpose in life is to be allowed the privilege of serving you. Our co-founder, Bill Wilson, had to ask for the privilege of carrying this message from his deathbed. The fallacy in Alcoholics Anonymous, people seem to think that Bill Wilson had a profound spiritual experience because God wanted him to. That's crap. Read his story in the book. His sponsor took him through these steps. Then he had a spiritual experience. That's why it's in the 12th step. His sponsor took him to. Read his story. Don't talk about things you don't know anything about or some supposition you've heard somewhere else. Take him to the black and white of that book. It says he acquainted him with his deficiencies. He had to learn he had to find a power greater than himself. He always believed in God, but now he was starting to really believe. Read what he said. Read where our program came from. Read what it brought about. Don't think just because you don't drink anymore and you put your butt in a chair every once in a while that you're going to have this profound spiritual experience because you want to. Huh. In the very beginning, before there was Alcoholics Anonymous, a very wealthy man who carried the message to Abby Thatcher, who carried it to Bill Wilson, Roland Hazard was his name, went to have his alcoholism or his drunkenness taken care of by this great psychiatrist. And he gave him all the synthetic knowledge that we get in these sober living houses and these treatment centers. This is where you treat alcoholism. This is where it's treated. It's not being treated at the pool. I'm sorry. I mean, you might be treating something down there, but you ain't treating this illness. He said when Roland got drunk on the way home and came back, he said, "I misdiagnosed your case. I thought you had a drinking problem, and I've come to understand you're the alcoholic, that there's no known cure for in the history of the world." In all desperation and deathliness, Roland Hazard said to me, "Is there no hope for me?" He said, "Yeah. Every once in a great while, one of you has a great, profound spiritual experience." And so that's what Roland Hazard did. He went out and tried to find a spiritual experience. He found it in service to others. He found it by talking to Abby Thatcher, who went to talk to our grateful founder, Bill. And Abby took him through the steps while he was in the hospital. And he had the great profound spiritual experience as a result of going through our program of recovery before it was written in a book. And you and I are the benefits of it this morning as we sit here. That the great foresight of these people who went before us had the foresight to write us a book and put down the lessons that they experienced and the program of recovery that you and I are privileged to incorporate into our beings and to carry that message to the alcoholic who still suffers. They had to, could you imagine what it would be if we didn't have that for a reference point? How we would be lost in the sea of misinformation and psychobabble and therapeutic nonsense and things that Dr. Bob says that has only interest in the mind. In Dr. Bob's story, he said he does this thing. He served a great many alcoholics. Over 5,000 of them he served and never made a penny on any of them. Not a penny. The money lender don't understand that in Alcoholics Anonymous today. He understood it. He says he does it for four reasons: the sense of duty, obligation to the people who carried the meeting to him when he was needy. And he takes out a little bit of insurance every time he carries this message against taking a little drink of alcohol. What fantastic history you and I have. And we seem to think it's just given to us. We have to get back to our roots, folks. My sponsor gives a great talk on where do we go from here. Why don't we just go back to where we're supposed to be? Why don't we go back to making our main purpose is to carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers? When we make it our purpose in life to go to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, forget all that outside stuff and those other things that we're doing, and try to carry the message to the alcoholic. Why don't we do that? Why don't we get back to what the book talks about, what we were given when we were new, the people who went before us, who blazed this trail? My papa, my sponsor Norm, my sponsor Clancy sitting in the front row. What these people done, they blazed it. We don't have to cut a new road here. It's laid out for us. All we got to do is get in line. That's all. All we got to do is go to meetings and find out who's doing this. Look for the spark in their eyes. Look for the willingness they have to serve their fellowship. Look for the willingness to do whatever it is. Look for the willingness to sit in a meeting, no matter how bored they may come. Sit in that meeting, night after week after week after week, and try to listen to the small, quiet voice of God. Talk to them through another alcoholic. You see, what comes from the alcoholic soul goes to the alcoholic soul. What comes from the drinker's head goes to the drinker's head. I mean, it has no way to touch the illness that's engulfing me. I'm a very blessed man. I got to spend a year spending my papa's last year with him, taking care of him, loving him. One time he said to me, as I went to visit him, I don't know what the problem was. This was before he was sick. He was bowling on the lawn down there in Laguna Beach, and I drove down there. And I don't know what was bothering me. Maybe I wasn't getting what I wanted at that moment, you know, which is usually what bothers me. And so I was talking to him on the bowling lawn. He said, just a minute, it's hot. I thought, he said to me, how far you see out there on that horizon? I said, what are you talking about? You've been in the sun too long, Pop? What's going on here? Just have some iced tea. So we said, oh. So about an hour later, we're sitting in the house. And we're sitting in my chair, and he's sitting in his. And I'm saying to him, whatever it was, I was bothering me. And he said, look out the window. Okay. He said, what do you see? I said, I see the ocean. He said, how far do you see? 7 miles. That's the horizon. He said, no, you don't understand, do you, son? He said, from that point to that point is 42 miles. I said, really? He said, to the horizon from where we started this thing, it's only 7 miles. And I looked at him dumbfounded because I'm just a babe in my papa's arms. And he said, you still don't understand, do you? And I said, no. He said, the higher you go, the further you see. And the further you see, the more there is to see. It's never ending. He says, if you could see it in its entirety, it would blind you. It would be like looking into the sun. And it's true. I've come to believe that with every fiber of my being. Not only do I love you, I love the people I sponsor so much that I want them to be allowed to see it like looking at the sun. I want them to know about the God of their very own that they can discover through the actions of Program of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is the only thing that's going to relieve you from this terrible sickness. Running around in circles and chasing your tail ain't going to do it. Just putting your butt in a meeting every once in a while and joining the social circles around here is not going to do it. You got to do what the book says. The main purpose is to discover a God of your very own. I was pleased one time that my sponsor Clancy came back from a trip up to Eau Claire, Wisconsin. And I was sitting with him and we were talking and he was saying to me, you know, Johnny, I sit in that church in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, and I felt the same God I felt in my Wednesday night meeting in Alcoholics Anonymous. Yep, that's it. That's good enough for my sponsor. That's good enough for me. It was good enough for my papa. My papa said about this God of love. God loves me. I'm his child. He loves you. You're his children. He likes it. You know, one of my friends had a heart attack last night. He's well. But I remember a couple of 3 months ago, 3 o'clock in the morning, I wake up, and I got an elephant sitting on my chest. And my first thought was, this is it. Had a good life. I didn't wake my lovely wife Karen up because I didn't want the paramedics coming in there fooling around with me, trying to inject me with something I don't want. So I let her sleep. I got up, took a couple of Tylenol, drank some water, and laid down to die. You know what my first thought was? Not afraid to die. I'm going to get to see my little brother. That was my first thought. My little brother, who I destroyed by my images and my self-centeredness and my wickedness. And I'm looking forward to that day. I'm not buying a ticket after the meeting to go get on the bus to go see him, but I thought that was kind of, I told Karen. She said, why did you wake me? I told her I didn't want the paramedics here. And she said, what did you think about? And I told her about Jackie, my little brother Jackie. She just nodded, she understood. She understands me. My sponsor understands me. I sit with him every week. For better or for worse, we sit there. And you know what I notice about my sponsor? He never sits in a bad meeting. Never. He never hears a bad speaker. Every once in a while he questions the secretary, but he never hears a bad speaker. So we sit there, and he proves to me that some people watch the old people in Alcoholics Anonymous and their behavior. Some people cling to everything we got. Let's not profess to say we love somebody if we don't want to pass this on. Let's take that word out of our, let's say we just tolerate them or we put up with them. If we love somebody, we do for them. If we love Alcoholics Anonymous, let's serve it. Let's do whatever it is in the capacity that we go to. My sponsor, Norm, gave me an exercise that I followed this very day 50-some years later. He said, you have to go to 3 meetings a week and listen. And I said, well, what if I'm talking? He said, that don't count because you're just listening to you. I still do that. I go sit in Monday night, Wednesday night, and Thursday night. I do not say a word. Every once in a while, Clancy thinks I'm praying. Because I say to him, Jesus Christ, Clancy, where did that one come from? I have a good life, folks. I have never been anywhere but Alcoholics Anonymous. I have never tried to solve my family's problems. My papa didn't. My mama never tried to solve Alcoholics Anonymous problems by going here, coming here. And yet I hear people who run around here, they're double winners. I told that to Papa one time. You know what he said to me? The only way you can wear 2 hats is to have 2 heads. This serves me well, this program. I was coming back from a trip not very long ago, and I'm in a plane, and I'm putting my book down, and I'm thinking, and I'm trying to figure out why I was given this gift. Somebody that I had sponsored or loved a great deal had just taken an overdose of and died. Somebody else a week before that had died from this illness. And I'm trying to figure out why. You know, I don't think God just snapped me and made me anything perfect. It's not to become educated beyond my intellect. It's not to have a home and a beautiful wife who I love or to be able to experience the love I have for you, not at all. Or the joy I get in watching somebody take a birthday cake. None of that. I think that I was given this precious gift of life so I could carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers in any way that I can, whether it's making coffee, picking up the chairs, putting them out, whatever I do. I turned around on my Monday night meeting the other night where I have a job of putting the chairs down, picking them up, putting them back down again for the table. And you know what I saw looking around? I saw 8 or 9 guys that I sponsor putting chairs around those tables in our home group. And I thought, that's what you're talking about, Papa. Talking to the hummingbird this morning, I saw him doing the very best I know how to do it, Pop. I'm not always joyful, I'm not always happy, but I'm just tickled to death that you came into my life and gave me this way of life. I'm tickled to death that Norm Alpe came into my life for 22 years and carried it on and told me about serving you and showed me how to serve you in any capacity and made it a joy to do so. Not to become a leader, not become a speaker, not become a whatever these things they call it, these circuses they're putting on. Alcoholics Anonymous in a lot of places today have become showcase for the contented. It should always remain a haven for the suffering. Always. Your home group should be a haven for the suffering. It's not a showcase for the candidate what happened to me, what I'm wearing to the meeting tonight, where we're going to have dinner next week. No. Find out where the alcoholic is. Find out where the newcomer is. Make it a point to get up and wander around and see who's suffering here. And it doesn't necessarily have to be a guy from the treatment center. There's time sitting in meetings when I'm suffering from whatever situation I've gotten me into. My action is what I tell the guys I sponsor: you got a problem, go find a newcomer. You know how hard it is for a real go-getter like me to go find a newcomer? Only when my butt is dragging will I go over and try to find one. I go through that greeting line every Monday night at my meeting, shaking hands with every newcomer in our group. I just want you to know that I love Alcoholics Anonymous. Everything that I have in life, everything I may ever hope to have in life, I will always love Alcoholics Anonymous. And the great thing that my sponsors have done for me, they have shown me the ability, no matter how long or how hard the road is, my only thing to do here is to be willing to serve you. That's all. No rapport, no pats on the back, no ha, 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 not another birthday cake, not a stand sober thing. My only great reward is to sit down and to be able to serve you. So I stand here this morning with everything in my fiber and say, I love you. Thank you for the privilege of allowing me to serve you one more time in any capacity I'm at, and I will be back. Thank you.
We hope you've enjoyed this recording. To obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.